break out your wireframes and heat up those Git repos. We're ready to tackle topics ranging from accessibility to front-end design, user experience, and beyond. You're listening to the Drunken UX Podcast with your hosts, Michael Feenan and Aaron Hill. Everybody, thanks for joining us this week on episode number 98 of the Drunken UX Podcast. This week, we're going to be talking about the importance of Atlas Content Modeler to the future of headless WordPress. We're being joined by Kellen Mays from WP Engine to talk about that. Folks, I am your host, Michael Feenan.
I'm your other host. How are you doing tonight, Michael?
I just took a swig of semi-warm scotch, and it hit me a little sideways. Sorry. Oh, make a face. All right, I'm good to go. Hey, I'm doing good. How are you doing, Aaron?
So my hands feel like they're on fire. I was cutting peppers earlier from my garden. They're these tiny little, like the size of like half my pinky, and they're like yellow. They look like tiny jalapenos.
What are those called? Like bird eye?
I don't know, but they're literally fire. I chopped a bunch and I de-seeded them, and then I washed my hands with soap because I thought that would do it. No, they are currently like burning very much.
But your arthritis is feeling better, isn't it?
I don't know if I have arthritis. I can't feel anything but pain.
So did you plant them knowing about the heat though, or was that that was a shock?
I got them from my neighbor. He's a really awesome, he's an amazing gardener, and I just like, what do you got? And he just gave me a bunch of things, and it's like, some of them are spicy peppers, some of them are like, you know, bell peppers, or some poblanos. I got some habaneros and jalapenos, and these were a surprise.
Sounds like you're setting up for a game of pepper roulette.
Right.
These would make a bowl of peppers, grab one, see what happens.
Right. Close your eyes, pop one,
take a bite.
This is the kind of pepper you want to like give to like a friend as a joke and be like, oh yeah, try this tiny little pepper. It's small. It's okay.
On our next episode, we're gonna do a variation of hot ones, right? I'm gonna get Aaron to eat peppers and answer questions about web development and see how that goes. I tell you what, if you want to see that, if you want to make that be a reality, go check out our sponsors over at the High Ed Web Association. Their conference is coming up on October 5th and 4th and 5th. And if you want to get a free ticket to that show, you can go to drunkenux.com/HEWeb21. That's drunkenux.com/HEWeb21. Shannon Kaysen is going to be their keynote speaker, and the entire event is online. So be sure to run by there and get yourself a ticket to the show.
Fun fact, High Ed Web is more or less how Michael and I met many years ago.
I think it is literally how we met. I mean,
we didn't meet in person. We met through the thing with High Ed Web that we don't talk about.
Oh.
High Ed Web. Yeah. Web. Yeah.
Yeah. Cincinnati. Folks, if you want to check us out, you can find us on Twitter or Facebook @DrunkenUX or Instagram @DrunkenUXPodcast. If you ever want to chat with us, we have a Discord server. Just go to drunkenux.com/discord and it'll drop you right in the place. Aaron,
yeah.
You have an icy glass of something. Is it cooling off your spicy hands?
You know, I haven't considered putting my hands into it, but that might help. I've got some gin and vermouth and a splash of lime juice, and it's all right. It feels like a good like end of summer drink.
Sort of a martini, like a...
Yeah, I'm not going to call it a martini because I did not measure anything. I literally just like poured some gin, poured some vermouth, splash of lime juice, and then whoosh, right downstairs. So
I warmed up for the show by finishing off a bottle of Speyburn 10, which was just sitting on my shelf too long, so I felt it was time to just finish that off. But I finished it before we even started, so I'm already on to another bottle of... I can't say the word even. Glenlivet 12. Nice. Very plain, straight up Speyside. Any bar is going to have it. If you ever want to try it, just walk wherever you like drinking and they will have it. I guarantee you. It's not fancy. It's not special. I don't even like it that much. And I kind of want to get it off my shelf. So I have to drink it to make it go away.
But Glenlivet, if you want to sponsor us, we are happy to say mediocre things about you.
Oh, no. I just don't like the 12. The 15 and the 18 are phenomenal. Even the 21 archive is pretty darn good. Like, I don't mind their higher end stuff and or even mid tier stuff. It's just for whatever reason, the 12, not my love. The 14 bourbon cask, also excellent. Like Glenlivet makes a lot of good scotch. It's just that their baseline 12 is not fun for me.
Try the 12. It's average.
Try the 12. It's good enough for everybody to have it. Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing, folks. We're going to be talking WordPress tonight. Specifically, we're going to be talking about a little plugin called the Atlas Content Modeler. To talk about this, we have brought in Kellen Mace. He is the senior developer advocate over at WP Engine. He's also the host of the Decode podcast. He's also formerly the senior software engineer at Finder. He's also the chief product officer at Harness Software and a developer at several other WordPress agencies. Cool. Kellen, welcome to the show. Glad Hello to see there. You.
I am glad to be here. Glad to be here.
Thanks for taking that long trip over one link to join us.
This is treacherous, but I made it. So
it's
happy to be
people navigate you. Their way here eventually. It's like we give you the map, you gotta cut through some jungles, and then your internet connection makes it to Kansas.
Yep.
although you're just kind of straight north of me, so while it's a good distance, you're at least in the same time zone.
Yeah, that helps.
I want to start real fast. Because the first thing I listed you as was the senior developer advocate at WP Engine. Now, developer advocates are kind of a new and up-and-coming title. We see them at DigitalOcean. We see them at GitHub. A lot of the folks, if you interact with like dev agencies at conferences, a lot of times you'll see developer advocates. That's becoming an increasingly hard word for me to say, and it's only 3 minutes into the show. Talk to us real fast. Like, I'm just curious, from your background, like how you got into development just in general, like what was sort of the catalyst for that and that journey to becoming a developer advocate? How did that happen to you?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll go not quite all the way back. We'll start at birth, but we'll rewind a little bit to my college days, I suppose. So in school, I was very much into music. I was a musician, played a lot of guitar and drums and was in some bands and things. I really loved that. But I never quite wanted to make a career out of it. I just pictured myself like endlessly touring the country in a bus or van or something. I was like, I don't know. That life doesn't quite appeal to me. And I'm not some superstar who's going to be, you know, famous and play shows and whatever.
I own guitars.
Yeah.
They hang on my wall really nicely.
Did they get some attention?
No. No. They look very nice over there, though. Like, they look impressive.
I own a guitar, a piano, and a drum kit, and I play all three poorly. Although, of the three, I probably play drums the best.
Nice. I like all three a lot. That was my thing in high school. Mm-hmm. I would just, like, fly off the bus and, like, crank up the amplifier and... Mm-hmm. Wait for my, you know, friends to come play or whatever. So, right. Yeah, so really, and I think that's a common story. Like a lot of developer people, I think, are just like have a creative side of them. That's why they like building things, you know? So they, I think a lot of times are like, oh, I'm also a novelist or musician or like other creative pursuits or whatever, I think is kind of common. So yeah, I was very much into music, but didn't quite want to do that as a career. So I had no idea what I, should major in college. I ended up, I had this kind of pivotal day where I printed off like this sheet of all the majors and academic programs that my school offered and crossed out all those that I did not want to do.
That's a good approach.
It was a process of elimination scenario for me. So I was like, I crossed out all the ones I didn't want to do. And somehow I landed on this degree. My school had occupational safety and health management.
Huh.
So I thought it was like broad enough in one sense, but narrow enough in another sense. So I went for that. And after I got out of school, I kind of paired those two together. I took like my safety degree and then, you know, this foot in the door that I had in the form of this hospital ER job. And I paired the two together and I started doing healthcare safety. So I did that for a number of years. And part of something in me wasn't satisfied. And that's like the creative, you know, part of me. I view myself as a creative person. Somebody who likes to build things and tinker and so on. And in that job, it's very much like, here's what OSHA says we have to do, or the EPA or whatever. And I'm going to train you to do exactly that. Nothing less, nothing more. And do it on repeat for first shift, second shift, third shift, this month, next month. And after a while, it got a bit old for me. So I wanted something new. This was around the time when some popular teach yourself to code sites were springing up on the internet. So those, you know, listeners, you might recognize like Codecademy or Treehouse or Code School were a few of the ones. In those days, those were becoming popular online, and I was always interested in tech. I was always like an early adopter of new software and just, you know, into tech. I saw that these, you know, teach yourself to code type sites were springing up online, and I thought at a certain point I was like, I wonder if I would like coding, you know, like writing code. I have a friend or two who do that, and it seems to be interesting for them. Like, I'll just try it, you know, just to tinker or whatever. So I did. I started going through some of the like curriculum that those services had, that those sites had, and ended up really liking it. You know, I thought, I remember thinking like, this is so cool that you can, if you just kind of commit to memory what the rules are and like how to write the syntax, you can do anything you want, right? You can say like, I'm going to take this data from here and push it over there and save it here and extract it here, and like, anything you can dream up, you know, there are very few limitations, it seemed like, to what you can accomplish if you just, you know, kind of know the basic building blocks of variables and conditionals and all that kind of stuff. So I actually took one intro to computer science course through Harvard University's Extension School. Great. I believe they renamed it back then. It was edX.org.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And that just furthered my like kind of love for building things with tech and with code and stuff. So yeah, that was the final straw, I think. So then I was all in after that. And thankfully for me, I have a good friend of mine, Brian Richards, you know, who you might know if you're in the WordPress space. Anybody listening, he runs WPSessions.com, which is like a WordPress-related training site. So Brian and I have known each other for years, like since college. And he, at the time, you know, had a lead WordPress development role. So I reached out to him and I was like, hey, I'm into this coding stuff. Like, what can you teach me? I want to learn more. And building sites for next to no money, you know, I would build like this pretty large site and charge somebody like $200 and spend like a month and a half on, you know what I mean? Oh. Like, but at that point I didn't care. I was in it. I wasn't in it for the money. I was in it for the learning. I was like, if I complete this project, then I'll know how to do all of those things for the next project. And I can eventually charge more and whatever. So I eventually got good enough at that to leave my healthcare job. So I was very excited about that. I went to go work for 10Up first, which is a well-known agency in the WordPress space. And the next several years, I worked for 10Up, for another company, Luminary Web Services, for Web Dev Studios after that. And by that point, I had some leadership responsibility. I was like in a lead engineer position by that point. So I was like leading some of our development we did for big enterprise clients, like Campbell Soup was one of the clients that we had. So I was, you know, leading the development team that built out many of the features for some Campbell sites and things like that. In the agency world, like I really enjoyed what I was doing, and I learned a lot. I was learning a lot. But at a certain point, I started like on the side. I became enamored with these new JavaScript, you know, frameworks that are coming out like React, and I was learning React and Redux and GraphQL and kind of, you know, tinkering with those technologies. And I really liked the just super snappy app-like experiences that some of those, you know, technologies brought to the table. But I wasn't able to do that in my day job. You know, my day job was still, you know, traditional server rendered, pages. So I kind of wanted to bridge the gap there. I was like, by this point, I have a lot of knowledge of like WordPress and all of its APIs, and I have this separate knowledge of, you know, working with React and GraphQL and Redux and these front end technologies. Like, I wonder if I could pair those together. You know, it's
responsible for Gutenberg.
It's me. You can blame me. Yeah, and Gutenberg was another reason to you know, learn kind of the basics of React too, since it uses that, of course. So anyways, I was looking around a bit and I found a job at a startup called Harness Software, and they had a WordPress backend, and they wanted to decouple the front end from that and have a more app-like experience with some more advanced features like offline mode, for example. So they wanted folks to be able to like load up the web app on their phone. Like, if the network connection drops out, you can continue, you know, filling out forms and submitting data and saving things. And then when the network connection was reestablished later on, then we would take any work that that person had done offline and then sync it back to the server. So stuff like that, you know, you can't quite do if you're doing the traditional server rendered web pages. Like the minute your network connection's gone, that's kind of it, right? The user's just like going to hit a white screen or whatever. So that was part of the motivation to decouple the front end so that we could have this application with its own logic, so it could, you know, continue working for the user even if the network connection was, you know, flaky or dropped out or whatever. So I learned an absolute ton in that job, and I went, you know, head first into the headless WordPress world. So that was my intro there. So I'm, you know, while at that job, I wrote an extension for WP GraphQL, which is a plugin that provides a GraphQL API for WordPress. I wrote an extension for that to support Gravity Forms, which is a common like form builder plugin. So I'm the author of like the WP GraphQL for Gravity Forms plugin that was used by that, you know, startup and so on. So gained a ton of experience there. At a certain point, I ended that job. I worked shortly for Finder, who you mentioned, for a few months, and then switched again and finally landed at WP Engine now. So WP Engine is the first job where I am in a developer relations role, where I'm a developer advocate. And it's a lot of fun. I like this job. It's different from my previous roles because they were all straight developer positions. At WP Engine, I feel like it's a good mix for me where I'm able to, like, I still code on projects and all the example apps and repos and stuff that I put together to demonstrate certain tech or certain features. Like I'm still doing that coding work, but then I get to turn around and share it with the community. And I get a lot of people saying like, thanks so much for giving this, you know, providing this free video. I've been just stuck on this particular thing for, you know, 2 weeks. And now you've just, you know, something you did in the video, I didn't think to do the first time I tried. So thanks so much for that. You know, it's very like gratifying. It feels good to help the community like that. So yeah, that's how I got to where I am.
So before we go diving headfirst into talking about this new tool, Atlas Content Modeler, I want to segue, and I want to do it sort of elegantly in that just because I have to say it out loud, it's like a comedian who has to explain their joke. Sometimes the joke is still funny just because they had to explain it. I will throw a disclaimer out just real fast. I am a WP Engine client. So the work that WP Engine does is important to me for a number of reasons outside of the fact that I just like WordPress and use WordPress a lot. That being said, I want to start with this idea that I don't know if it's just a perception I have, but I feel like WP Engine has been putting forth a lot of effort of recent, or an increased amount of effort of recent, into like the headless WordPress sort of movement,
We've talked about headless WordPress before, but
we've talked headless WordPress, we've talked static WordPress.
Yeah, can we do a refresher really quick on headless WordPress?
So yeah, let's start there, right?
Yeah.
So Kellen, sure. If somebody comes to you and uses these words, because they tend to come up frequently, and I feel like it's a case of a square is a rectangle, but a rectangle isn't a square. But maybe I'm defining that wrong. Like, what differentiates between headless and static?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say to me, like the word headless, that is being differentiated from a monolith. So that's a common term that you'll hear like in the software development space. You know, if a tech stack is a monolith, that means it is a central code base that controls the front end and the back end. So by back end, I mean, you know, actually like reading and writing things to the database and things like that. And by front end, I mean the actual HTML and CSS and so on that results in what the user views. So headless is breaking the two apart.
I'm reminded of like what we call MVC architecture, right? Model view controller and a platform that does all three of those. They control the data model. They control the system that accesses that data, and they control the system that presents that data.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So Ruby on Rails, right? very, very, very popular, powerful MVC framework. You know, Laravel is another like very popular one these days. And I'm not, before we get too far, like, I'm not one of these people who thinks that that the headless approach is like the only good one and should be used in all use cases.
Sure, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get stuck in those kind of traps, I think, if you're earlier in your development career. But in my experience, you know, the longer you're in it, you realize the truth is the answer to almost everything is, well, it depends. What are the needs of the needs of the project? You know, what talents do the people on the team have? What's the hosting situation? You know, how to deploy the work? All of these things, you know, influence like what the right framework is. So
I want to emphasize that because you just said the same thing that we have said on this show many times, right? And we did not prompt you to say that this notion of, you know, well, here's the thing. It depends. Like that, those comments don't come from a place of like, I don't know what I'm talking about, or I am uncertain about my skill set. It comes from the experience of knowing that, man, there's a lot of variables to juggle, and the right solution depends on the right deliverables. So I just want to, I want to emphasize that, because I'm like, thanks for reinforcing that kind of thing.
I wasn't coached.
A follow-up question to the last one. When would you use, when would you want to use headless WordPress versus the normal WordPress instance? Like what is kind of the point where you're like, okay, I need to move over to doing headless WordPress?
Yeah, I think there can be a few of them. You know, traditional monolithic WordPress works great for many applications and has for years now. But there are a few things that headless WordPress brings to the table that are difficult, or in some cases, you know, not possible to do with a traditional monolithic architecture. So one common one these days is to have multiple sources of data for your website.
Okay.
So I'll break that down a bit more. So like one common thing these days is this buzzword of Jamstack. You know, you hear that a lot these days on the web. It was popularized by Matt Billman and Phil Hawksworth of Netlify. They wrote a book kind of introducing that term or whatever.
Let's see if I can get this right. JavaScript. APIs.
Yep. Oh, right.
What is it, Aaron? Help me out.
Is it MostgreSQL?
Mostgres. I like it. I'm going to create a new piece of tech called Mostgres.
Mostgres.
It's not that. It's markup. It's the HTML. It's the thing that makes our stuff. That's right.
Okay.
I'm the idiot. Yeah, it's okay.
So, yeah, in the Jamstack case, it's the M is supposed to refer to pre-rendered markup. So the idea is like you build the, you know, as much of the page as you can ahead of time at build time. You build out that HTML, and then anything else you would, you know, fetch on the client and so on. But anyways, yeah, not to get too derailed too much. So in the Jamstack architecture, the idea there is you have one site that might have multiple sources. So it could pull in data from your CMS, like to display your blog posts. It pulls in data from your Shopify store, maybe to display your e-commerce portion of your site. You're pulling in data from Salesforce, from the YouTube API, whatever it may be. You know, you have these multiple sources. So if you're building in this decoupled architecture, that's, in my experience, that becomes more easy to manage. You know, you can at build time query all of these different data sources, and then kind of, you know, stitch that data together and render the HTML that ultimately makes up the page. Another one would be just if you want a single page app experience. You know, so if a client came to me and said, we run a great podcast. It's called the Drunken UX Podcast. And
nobody says that
for our particular site,
Michael,
or whatever podcast. And they said, for our particular site, we would like an audio player that's sticky, that sticks to the bottom of the site. And we want listeners to be able to play an episode and then have uninterrupted streaming audio as they browse the rest of the site. Right. As their route transitions happen, we want the audio to be uninterrupted. So if you're asking yourself, like, well, how would I do that on a traditional WordPress site? Right. Like it's possible, right? You would have a lot of probably pretty awkward JavaScript where you'd have to say, like, every time a user hits the link, you have to prevent the default behavior.
Right.
And then do an AJAX request to get the new content and replace what's on the page. And then use push state to update the URL. All the stuff that you kind of get for free with single page app frameworks that are out there.
I actually solved that problem. It would have been 2005 or 2006. Did you? I solved it by using frames. So I put the audio player into a frame on the bottom of the page, set the frame border to zero, and cut the gutter out. And it did exactly what you're just describing. I felt so dirty.
Hey, Kellen, I just had an opening for a new co-host. If you're interested in leaving a decode, I'm just gonna say like
that's the last straw.
New process, right? No, but what you're talking about, right? Like that will sound very familiar though to like React devs or Next devs or Vue devs. Like this idea of having what we call routes, right? Like things that the URL of a page will change, the history of a page will change, but what's actually happening in the browser is you're never leaving, you're never changing anything. It's just what you're seeing is changing.
Yep.
Using the MVC stuff that we've been talking about, would it be accurate to say that using headless WordPress might be when you want to like dramatically change the view layer, but you want to keep kind of the model controller layers? Like kind of as is or like governed by WordPress internals?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think decoupling like that kind of turns MVC on its head. You know, you can't say that the front end JavaScript app is only the view and then everything else, like the controllers and the model, are still all in the back end. Cause I don't think that's quite true, you know, because when you have like a front end app written in React or Vue or Svelte or something like that, it's doing a lot of the decision making, like routing and data fetching and then templating and things like that. It's doing all of those things. So I think that extends more than just the Vue. You know, like it's doing some decision making there. It's like, what's the route? Is the user logged in and they have the permissions to fetch data? If so, fetch the data. And then do the templating where you're taking the data and, you know, injecting it into some markup and then render that to the page. So yeah, I think it dips into more than just the view layer, if you want to think of it that way. So
I like this because, you know, it's getting into some detailed conversation about like what the difference between this and that and all that is. To which I want to ask, what, like right now, so you have developed a tool called Atlas Content Modeler that is designed to assist in the process of making a headless WordPress website. Right before you get to that step, what is it that you think right now, like what precipitated you creating that? What barriers or challenges did you see with folks? Because, right, we have the WordPress REST API. We have the GraphQL plugins now that we can get real cool queries going. GraphQL is a way of querying data and getting it out of not just WordPress, but any system. It's just a data format like XML or JSON or things like that. And WordPress has a plugin that supports that. So what is it that like you think right now is like hindering people from making the decision to say, you know what, I have this thing I want to build and I could do it in WordPress, but it's not quite right. I'm not ready to jump into like full blown React and all of that. What are those challenges and barriers that are there now?
So with WordPress, with like traditional monolithic WordPress, it gives you a lot of things for free that you don't have to think twice about. So one example would be if somebody is a content creator, you know, and they've created a new blog post, they've typed up a part of it, you know, maybe half of it, and they think, I want to see what this looks like on the front end. I want to preview this post. So they hit the preview link. You know, what WordPress will do is send you to the front end of the site with a URL parameter with the post ID. And then realize, oh, this logged in person, I'm able to authenticate and authorize this person and know that they're the author of this post. And now I'll display it for them in, you know, as a preview of the post. So things like that, you kind of take for granted if you've been in the WordPress world for a bit. But when you decouple the front end from the back end, you have to think about like, oh, wait a minute. Now when that person goes to preview the post and see what it would look like on the front end, my friend lives over there now. Yeah. Right? It's decoupled. So I actually have to put some thought into, into I need to authenticate and authorize the person over there on my decoupled app. And then once I know they have access, then I can, you know, get this draft post that only that person has access to and show it in my front end app. And you have to rewrite the little preview link so that when it's clicked, it would send the user to the right place to that app to view the preview. So things like that, you know, and as I describe it, you might hear this and think, headless sounds like a bad idea if I have to rewrite some of the, you know, features I get for free with WordPress. And there are those, you know, trade-offs at this point, but I think it's getting easier and easier. And there's a lot of interest in like headless CMSs in general. A lot of companies out there like Contentful and Prismic and Sanity and so on are, you know, kind of, popularizing the headless CMS as well. And WordPress, of course, can't be overlooked. Like it's 40%+ of the web at this point. So even if a fraction of those sites, you know, are interested in headless architecture, we're talking about huge numbers here, right? So yeah, it can be advantageous depending on the project and worth those pain points that you might hit along the road. So with that, we can segue into Atlas Content Modeler specifically if you...
Now I very much want to talk about like the Content Modeler itself, right? Because WordPress has an API that lets you create custom post types. Depending on different systems, we'll call these different things, content structures, content models, whatever. In some systems, that may be a custom table in the database. In WordPress, it's all one giant table. So to do this in WordPress right now is kind of a... Either you have to do it in all vanilla code, right? Or use like a generator or something like that. Or use, most people will use either like pods or the pods plugin or advanced custom fields, ACF, to do all this. And the one thing that like I immediately thought of was, okay, I use ACF all the time. I create a custom post type, throw my custom fields in there. And I'm like, why would I use Atlas Content Modeler? Looking at the demo, and we'll have a video, of course, in the show notes for this that shows like Atlas Content Modeler in action. And the first thing is like, oh, well, it's just doing what Advanced Custom Fields does. Is that not the case?
It does compete pretty directly with ACF, but it's specific to headless WordPress. So I would say, you know, if you're somebody who's in the WordPress space out there listening and you have a system in place already for creating your custom post types, for adding custom fields to those, like ACF, you know, and any taxonomies maybe that you'd want to add already, and that suits your needs, you know, all the data, your data storage issues are taken care of by those, you know, then I wouldn't change a thing. Like, that works well for you. Once you decide on a headless architecture, though, some of those things become more difficult. For example, like, you know, to create what we're referring to a moment ago as a content model, you need a few pieces. You need like a custom post type. You need some custom meta fields for that post type. You may also choose to have like a taxonomy for that post type so that you're able to group together or categorize, you know, your posts together. And even beyond that, sometimes for some projects, it's necessary to have relationships that you can efficiently query. So if you've been in the WordPress space for a while, you might have heard of like posts to posts. It was a very popular plugin for a while for like maintaining very efficiently querying based on like posts that are related to one another, for doing like many to many queries, things like that. You would need, you know, each of those things you might need to create your full data model for the kind of data that you want to store. And doing that for a headless WordPress project, you know, up until Atlas Content Modeler was on the scene, doing that for a headless project was kind of cumbersome. So it would look like this. So for your custom post type, you could use a plugin like Custom Post Type UI. So you can install that plugin and use that to register your post type and register your taxonomies, or hard code all that if you wanted to, but one of those two options. And then for custom fields, that in that case, you might reach for ACF and use that for your custom field. For relationships, then you need to reach for something like I mentioned, post to post or MB relationships. And if you have all of those, then you would think, oh, wait a minute, I'm doing this site with a headless architecture. So that means I need a way to extract all of that data and have it exposed in either the REST API or the GraphQL schema. So that's available to my front end app, because you don't get that for free out of the box.
Right.
Right. So the custom post type UI plugin, it recently added support for exposing post types in the GraphQL schema. For ACF, advanced custom fields, there is a WP GraphQL extension that that exposes that in the GraphQL schema. So you could use that. For custom, for relationships, I've never seen anything. I don't think that exists. So right now it's possible to get all that wired up, but you hear, as I'm talking through this, you hear all the moving pieces. It's like, well, you need these four plugins, and then you need several more plugins just to add those first four to the GraphQL schema. And then finally you end up with, okay, now I'm able to save all of my data that I need for my models, as well as, you know, expose all my data to the front end application. So that's kind of the primary value proposition for Atlas Content Modeler. It comes along and says, if you have ACM running on your site, you can create a new model. Let's say it's called Project. You know, I can create a new model called Project and say, this project is going to have like the person's the street address. Let's say it's like a construction company doing work on business and residential addresses or whatever, and they want to keep track of their projects. So they could say, I'm creating a new project model, and it's going to have a number of fields. It's going to have street address, client name, client contact phone number, whatever. You can register your meta fields, enable a relationship, set it up between two models. And then the moment you've done all this, you've defined your model, which is your post type, your fields, your taxonomies, your relationships, and then you hit save. Now it's in the GraphQL schema or REST API, and you can head over to your front end app and start querying for that. So it's already available to you.
Let me ask a maybe obvious question, but maybe not, which is, obviously you've built Atlas Content Modeler as a tool for people wanting to build headless WordPress websites. Is it usable? Is it helpful for folks who want to build a normal WordPress website, but still want the ability to build a custom post type and have that advantage of, I'm going to build all these custom fields and everything, and maybe down the road I might go headless, I don't know, but I'd like to maybe future-proof myself a little bit. Does it work well in the absence of that headless architecture as well?
Right. Yeah, it's a good question, and it doesn't. It's geared specifically to headless architectures.
Gotcha.
That was an early decision. You know, they looked at what the goal was for the project and decided, instead of trying to support traditional monolithic WordPress and headless, at the same time and maintain both going forward, it is more advantageous to only focus on headless WordPress sites. So yeah, it only supports that. So if you don't plan to pull your data out via the REST API or GraphQL schema, then yeah, you would want to use other solutions like, the custom post type UI plus ACF, those solutions.
Is there a route for converting? So like if I've got, let's say, and I've referred to this, and I know at this point people are starting to be like, are you really doing this? I am redesigning the Drunken UX site. And I'm building it like a traditional WordPress site. And I've got already a podcast structure with all our episodes in it. But you posed a good option, right? Maybe I want to build a site where I can have like a static player that sits on the page that is always there, available, and can play even as they're navigating the site. Is there a route in ACM in terms of like being able to convert an existing structure to an ACM structure? Or if I've already got existing stuff, do I kind of have to stick to how that is moving forward?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Under the hood, it doesn't do many custom things. Like it adheres pretty tightly to the way WordPress does things. So when you create a model behind the scenes, that's a post type. And when you add custom fields, it's ultimately saving those at to the post meta table in the database, just like ACF would. When you create a taxonomy, it's saving those in the same way that you would if you're using a different plugin to create those. So yeah, to answer your question, if you're somebody who's registered your post type and uses ACF maybe to add some custom fields to that, and you wanted to move to ACM, what you would need to do is create a model and then make sure the name of it matches the post type you had already created. And then for your fields, you get to specify the meta keys. So you could, if you had like a single line text field that ACF was targeting, you know, named hello_world in your model, your new model that you're creating, if you create a single line text field and you tell it to use, you know, that same hello_world for the meta key, you know, all those two plugins would just do the same thing. Essentially, they'd get they'd read and write the data from the same exact, you know, row in the post meta table. So yeah, that's definitely doable. So post types, taxonomies, and custom fields would all map very easily, I think, okay. If you make sure the names match up, like I said.
Right, right. Aaron, careful around the eyes. I saw what you were doing there. He's still complaining about his fingers behind the scenes as we're recording, and I saw him rubbing his eyes with his hands.
I used my wrist.
That is part of your hands.
Well, I know, but I didn't touch the spicy stuff to my wrist, and it's not as bad as it could have been, but...
He's making faces, that's all I know.
He's starting to hallucinate from the ghost peppers.
I don't know what these are. I put photos in the guest channel. We should put them on social or something, as you can see. Someone can identify them for me.
I will gladly make fun of your pain.
But we should share the one with the picture of my fingers and the redness on them.
So, I'm not entirely sure Aaron doesn't have an allergy. I'm just going to throw that one out there. But, Kellen, with the Atlas Content Modeler, so this is a plugin. You just install it in WordPress, and it gives you the ability to then just create these deals. Is that a repo plugin yet, or is that something that they have to download on GitHub or through WordPress Engine? Is it available to people freely right now?
Yeah, great question. It is available. It's not on the WordPress.org plugin directory at this point, but there's a public GitHub repo, so anybody can use it right now.
Gotcha.
At the moment, only a subset of the fields that will eventually exist do exist. You know, so if you install it right now, you'll see there's like single line text area, WYSIWYG, number, Boolean, and maybe one or two other field types. You know, which is quite a few less than, you know, if you're used to something like advanced custom fields. Of course, it has a whole, you know, list of things to choose from. So this, you know, this project will get there. The team is working on adding field types as we go. So right now it's in an alpha beta.
Yeah, I
don't know if it's technically
it ain't gold,
but I believe it is.
it ain't gold yet.
So I would say if you want to try it out, definitely do it, but not on a client, you know, production client project. Maybe do it on your own sites. And I know the team would love like any feedback that you have as well. So in the README for that repo, there are instructions there about like, hey, if you find a bug or some, you know, confusing parts in the UI or whatever, I was like, please reach out here, you know, and there's some instructions there about how to inform the decision making.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get into something. We kind of opened this can a little bit already, but I want to loop back to it and kind of nail it down pretty specifically, which is let's talk about use cases a little bit. Because like we talked about, not everybody needs a headless site.
Right.
The right solution for the right problem. And so for something like this, right, we assume that you have a server that's running PHP and as such can run WordPress. And so we're using WordPress to have an interface to model our data, to store that data in a database so that we can get it and to give us the APIs so that we can get at it. From the front end, where do you see like a tool like this, whether that's topic-wise, industry-wise, subject-wise, like what kind of sites do you think will really benefit from having this kind of approach, as opposed to say, going out and being like, well, we're just going to build our own React app or something like that. We're going to set up a Mean stack. Was it Mongo Express, APIs, and Neanderthals? Because I remember all of these acronyms off the top of my head. What are those use cases? What do those look like for something like this? And where do you envision it really making an impact?
Yeah, so we touched on this briefly with a few of those use cases, like pulling from multiple sources or the persistent audio player example across pages. Yeah, those would be good ones. But there are some more big ones as well that folks out there might want to consider as well. Another one is having a backend that serves up agnostic, data to any type of client. So if that's necessary. So what I mean by that is if you're choosing a decoupled architecture, what you end up with is either the REST API or the GraphQL schema on your WordPress backend. You can ask it for things and it gives you back very unopinionated JSON data. You can do anything you want with that. So that means if you're, and I've talked with folks out there in the community who work with clients who say, yeah, we want to manage all of our content in WordPress, and then we plan to query for that data and render it on our website, on our iPhone app, on our Android app, on maybe there's a desktop application that they're building, or wherever else on the web. So if you ask yourself, well, how would I do that in a traditional WordPress site where your WordPress backend, generally speaking, it just serves up HTML, like the fully rendered HTML pages, it's making the assumption that like the one and only place this is used is on the web because that's, I'm serving up HTML. So what would you do if you needed an iOS or Android application? If your web server only serves up HTML, you might be able to use some of that like inside of a web view or something on those devices. But at that point, you're kind of turning it into a website. It's not a true native app at that point. So I've met folks in the community out there who opt for something like WP GraphQL, knowing that now my content creators can go into WordPress and, make all their, do all their authoring and editing of content there. And then that will, the web backend will serve up this raw JSON data, and that will be consumed by my, Next.js or Gatsby or Nuxt or whatever front end on the web, and also consumed by my iOS app and also consumed by my Android app. Which is cool. It's a nice idea that it's this unopinionated source of data that can be used by any client.
What about we'll land the plane with this kind of thought. Golden nugget territory. What's the golden nugget that you would want somebody to take away who's thinking about ACM? Like, what's the important, like, if I've learned one thing listening to this conversation, what would you want them to walk away with in terms of whether that's something about headless WordPress itself, whether that's something about the Atlas Content Modeler, what is that sort of like one thing that you think is really valuable that people should be thinking about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say there are two, big decisions to make. Like if you have a web project and you've already settled on WordPress for the backend, at least if you're going to use it as a CMS, you've at least decided that much. I think the next decision you had to make is, the traditional monolithic architecture versus a headless or decoupled architecture. And I would just weigh the pros and cons there. Hopefully this podcast episode is helpful. Some of the things we've talked about, some of the examples where headless might be advantageous, might be helpful for you making that decision. As I mentioned, it's not without its pain points, though, like the preview links and other things like form submissions and things like get more complex if you choose that. So I would do some research there and figure out if it's a good setup for the project. If it is, then the other decision is how are you going to create those content models? So in my opinion, Atlas Content Modeler is going to be a very convenient and powerful way to do that. Right at this moment, it doesn't have all the fields baked in or relationships isn't fully supported yet and so on. It's still early days, so. So if you have to get a site out the door like right now, maybe and it's a headless architecture, maybe opt for ACF and other things, but definitely keep your eye on Atlas Content Modeler as a tool. It's going to make it easier for you to create those data models as opposed to cobbling together multiple plugins to do the same thing.
Hmm. Yeah, easy way. And the other thing I was thinking about as you talked about how you're trying to unify the tools in ACM so that you don't have to go out and get this plugin and that plugin and this other plugin to kind of produce the same outcome through a normal backend. I always think about what happens when one of those things breaks, right? Like you, when you have to rely on three or four plugins to produce your outcome, you become beholden to this tool chain that any one of those things pushes out a bug, even accidentally. I mean, nobody pushes out a bug intentionally for the most part, but
right.
ACM tries efforts to like get all that into one space. And let's pretend that you have a test suite. I'm going to guess that there's probably a pretty good test suite involved in that, and that you guys are thinking about those things. And it's like, when you guys push an update out, it's probably coming with some pretty robust help, so to speak, to prevent that kind of mistake. And that right. you're thinking about your product as opposed to the other plugin authors that are thinking about their plugin, but not necessarily how it interacts with others. And so you reduce right. the number of vectors, right, that can be a problem. Yeah. And I think that's going to be really valuable, I think, to folks who want to be like, I need one stop, man. I need to be able to right. trust my one tool in front of me.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for minimizing those dependencies, like you said, right? As soon as one version number isn't quite compatible with the rest,
right?
Now there's trouble. But yeah, if it's unified, then you're in a better spot there. So it's a big benefit.
Anybody who's developed long enough knows that every fringe bug won't affect you. But one day, the odds are against you. And right. one of those fringe bugs is going to land on your plate. And it's going to be the one time you need to use ACF with the GraphQL plugin, with the Post UI plugin. It's going to be like, you're going to be at the nexus of that bug.
Right.
It's going to happen. It's just that is right, purely a matter of odds.
Yeah.
Folks, take a break, sit back. We're going to get you out of here after this message from our sponsor. As we talk about WordPress, it's also important to emphasize the fact that there are a lot of people out there using WordPress. What are we at? Like 37, 38% of websites use it. A lot of universities are using it. And one area where you can learn about all of the different ways that these large and very complex organizations are using WordPress is by checking out the High Ed Web Conference. Aaron, you've been there.
I've been there. I've been to the regional ones.
They do regional ones as well. Yeah. Those are great because they're much more like focused in. Mm-hmm. You got a smaller group of people. You can get in like one room and mm-hmm. have fun with that and get to know folks. I have my red stapler from my talk a few years back on Tag Manager. I'm very proud of that award. Thank you.
Office Space reference, I take it?
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. It absolutely exactly
right.
is.
I love it. Yep.
The talks are really great. But honestly, like, I think one of the hugest benefits from it is the fellowship. Getting to meet other people who are doing higher ed work just like you are is like, it's, I can't even emphasize how like valuable it is.
And
meeting people who are facing the same kinds of challenges you are, both with like the institution and also with students, and the same kind of like problems to solve and everything. Like you can't beat that. And that's something that you don't get if you only watch the talks on YouTube after the fact. So like getting to interact with these people is really great.
This year they are online. You can thank COVID for that, but they do the crux of this organization is online, or I'm sorry, in-person conferences. But this year they are online if you want a very like accessible format. They do have live captioning on their stuff. They do take all of their accessibility and things very seriously. They have incredibly affordable registration. Their 2021 conference is designed to literally offer you flexibility to join the conversation the way that you need to and how you need to. Their next conference is October 4th and 5th. This is all online. Their keynote presenter is the host, Shannon Kaysen from NPR. And you can visit drunkenux.com/HEWeb21. That's drunkenux.com/HEWeb21 to register for that conference. Kellerman, thanks for sitting down with us this week. I appreciate you talking about the Atlas Content Modeler. I'm excited to use it. I've got some stuff that I've already got kind of in mind in terms of where this might be useful for me and the projects we've got going on. Check it out. You can get that plugin over on GitHub. We will have links in the show notes. But while you're looking at that, Kellen, I want to give you the microphone. Take 2 or 3 minutes, whatever you need. Tell folks what you got going on, where they can find you, and anything else that you think they should be paying attention to.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, first off, you know, you're welcome for coming on. It was my pleasure. It's always fun geeking out and talking about this stuff with other like-minded folks. So thank you for having me on. In terms of what I'm working on, as mentioned, you know, my day job is at WP Engine doing developer relations, developer advocacy type stuff. So if you're out there listening and you're interested in this headless WordPress world, maybe want to learn more about how to do that, how to develop sites in that way, definitely check out developers.wpengine.com. That's a site where that's kind of the hub for all of our content. So we have blog posts linked from there. Our YouTube channel is linked from there. The Decode podcast that we mentioned earlier, you'll find links to it there as well.
Excellent show. I am a listener, so.
Thank you. Yeah. So we have links to all of those things, including documentation as well. So Atlas Content Modeler, we've been talking about for the episode here. Very shortly, we're going to have our documentation is going to go live for that project, and it'll be linked from that developers.wpengine.com site as well. So yeah, that's where to find all the stuff that we're working on. Me personally, I have a little side project I'm working on just to learn some new tech. I don't know if anyone's remotely interested in this, but I'm building something that I think is cool. So I'll just mention that. It's videomentions.com is this new little app I'm building. I'm working in SvelteKit. And I'm using Supabase, which is kind of a backend as a service. It's kind of similar to Firebase, only it's an open source alternative to that. So I'm using that, and I'm trying out Tailwind CSS as well. I feel like I'm late to the party there. So many developers like are gaga about Tailwind. I've never done a actual project with it. So yeah, I'm having fun trying out the new tech, and I have this new app, videomentions.com. That's the idea there is you can type in a certain word and tell it what YouTube channels you want it to monitor, and then it'll email you anytime any of those YouTubers say the words that you told it to listen for. So if you have a certain phrase Google that you alerts. Care about, if that's anywhere in their spoken words that they say somewhere in the episode, it'll email you and say, hey, this episode at the 3-minute, 40-second mark, the phrase you care about was said, you know. So I'm having fun with that. I've it's a little app idea I had and I want for myself, and maybe other people don't care, but I'm building it anyway so I can use it. So.
Yeah, that is how we all do it, right? Like, you got to find those passion projects.
Can I sign up with the words, hey, it's your boy?
Right, yes. Yeah, or hey, you guys, right? That's another, like every other video someone's saying, yeah.
Don't forget to like and subscribe and click the bell.
Exactly, yeah. Your email inbox will be filling up pretty quick.
I'm not even kidding. We're going to put photos of these peppers up on Instagram, which you can see at instagram.com/junkinuxpodcast. Or you can come and talk to us about peppers and also ACM at Facebook and twitter.com/junkinux. Or come and chat with us about pepper discourse at drunkenux.com/discord.
I was worried you were going to say discourse there at the end. That made me worried, but you pulled it out. I give you credit. And the only thing that really matters as far as like things like Atlas Content Modeler and those kind of tools, it doesn't matter if you're using headless WordPress. You can be as headless as you want to as long as you keep your personas close and your users closer. Aaron, keep your fingers off your eyes. Bye-bye.